The Bronx Horns with Second Wind. It's from their acclaimed 1995 album, Catch the Feeling. Bobby Porcelli on alto sax, Ray Vega on trumpet, and Mitch Froman on tenor, soprano, and flute, with a horn section for Mongo Santamaria and Tito Puente for many, many years. They're joined here by an equally potent percussion and rhythm section, most notably with Jimmy Delgado on timbales, George, his brother, on congas, Johnny Rodriguez on bongos, Oscar Hernandez on piano, and Johnny Torres on bass. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead, and it's Free Your Mind Friday. It's where we get things said that need to be said. My goodness, what a week! And it hasn't stopped. It's getting crazier and crazier. Calamity, treachery, conspiracy, intrigue. And that's just Congress. Surely you have something to say about all the news that unfolded this week. So let's give it a try at 888-874-4888. Let's talk about what you're thinking about any of the week's events. And we wanted to start something that I used to do quite a bit, which is you may be paired up with someone. Just be prepared. You may be paired up, and we'll hear the rapport between two people. So 888-874-4888 is the number to call. As we get your calls in, I do want to say thank you so much for the very positive feedback we've been getting on the programs that we did, especially in the aftermath of that massacre in Orlando and the politicization of it, which still continues. We will go back to it from time to time because we see how it's being used, and this is the tragedy of things, where politics and political agendas supersede what people really want. And what they want is some kind of a humane response, and the humanity of it being the priority, not political, the grist for political bills that everybody is grinding around these days in this political season. 888-874-4888. Let's get started with Joel from New York. Hello, Joel. You're on the air.
Hey, Eutrice. How are you doing?
Good. How about you?
I'm doing fine, thank you. I'm doing fine. So I think I'd like to say a few words about the remarks that Comrade Bernie made last week, kind of quasi-capitulation speech. I think it was the night before the much-ballyhooed People's Summit in Chicago. And that speech is still available. People want to see it. It's on the web. It's all over the web. That's where I got it. Anyway, his sermon was filled with, for those who didn't see it, with the standard the standard stump speech rhetoric, but he certainly made it clear. Did you hear the speech, by the way?
Oh, yes.
Any chance?
Okay. Yes, all 23 minutes and 23 seconds of it.
And he made it clear that he would cut off any of his own body parts to defeat Trump, as I recall, and that he'd be working with Hillary to do so. And, you know, it reminded me of one of those expensive dark money political ads on TV. It was a kind of non-endorsement endorsement of Hillary with a promise that, his real role, helping her, would be revealed shortly. And as I was listening to this, I kept thinking about Hillary supporters who might have seen all of this as a kind of slap in her face and in theirs. But in reality, I thought it was just a little love pat, you know, a peck on her cheek with a promise of full matrimonial bliss to come. He's doing exactly what we have said, what we said when he entered this race over a year ago. He is playing a role, and you've talked about this again and again, but it has to be emphasized. He's playing a role that has become almost standard fare in Democratic presidential elections. The role of the sheep herder, the Pied Piper, the apparent revolutionary who walks onto the national stage, you know, like a warm-up speaker for a year, promising great reform and changes to come via his so-called revolutionary movement within the Democratic Party. And then, when the electoral insurgency fails after the primaries, declares victory, points to the massive movement building, and begrudgingly or belatedly endorses the choice of the liberal oligarchy, and proves to be what Democrats today call true blue. Have you heard that term before? Capital T, capital B. I actually heard it on the air the other day. True blue, going out and campaigning like a demon on fire in the fall to help the Democrats, in this case Hillary. This year, of course, the GOP candidate is Trump. And he's opposed by everyone, from the GOP oligarchs, the Alcins from his own party, to the leaders of the bipartisan neocons, to the Koch brothers, to the Wall Street firms, to the mainstream media, and of course he's opposed most of all by Hillary, and especially the progressive wing of her party, you know, which has been rebranded by Bernie as Our Revolution. And to make sure that Our Revolution doesn't stray into the hands of the Green Party, the Democrats were very careful in their progressive summit in Chicago last week not to invite Jill Stein to speak to their People's Summit. And that sent a message loud and clear. It's Our Revolution. Bernie's revolution is one with the party. So you know what I say?
What do you say?
I say, you know, actually, what I really say is that Bernie and his gang are really being quite brilliant in slowly trying to deliver so much of the movement to the Democratic National Committee and Hillary as is humanly possible. I mean, the vitriol that he is getting on social media and in mainstream media, you already see what's going on in MSNBC and the other one, CNN. The vitriol that he's getting for not already have said the magic words of endorsement is really a wonderful con, because other than saying those words, he is behaving like a good Democrat. He truly is. And you talk about this again and again. He wants his movement to survive in some identifiable form, just like the Rainbow Party survived Jackson's electoral fate, or Democracy for America, remember that, survived Howard Dean's electoral fate. He needs to tread his path of Philly carefully, not spilling too many eggs from the basket. He is delivering to Hillary, still looking and sounding heroic to his millions of fans and supporters. We have to recognize that this is just one big con.
Absolutely. I'm going to share this wonderful speech. That's why I knew it was 23 minutes and 23 seconds long, because it is incontrovertible proof that Bernie Sanders himself has gotten burned, and we are getting burned, those who have supported him. We're getting burned in terms of the political games that are being played precisely at a time when such efforts, and in his speech he's describing, you know, the incredible momentum that he and his movement, and he's talking about it as a people's movement and the revolution, this political revolution, as if it were news. This is not news. This has been done before. So it has been proven several times that when people sense a kind of connection with a candidate saying the right things, they would vote for that person. They would support that person. So this is not new. His his particular ideology may be different in some senses, but what he's saying essentially is not new, and it is not new that people would gravitate and support that. That's been established. We talked about Jesse Jackson. So I'm going to be talking about this speech because it's a fascinating, as you said, it's a non-endorsement endorsement. And it also is, I think, a wake-up call, because there's something that still could happen. There could be the revolution against Bernie. Revolt against him and put him in his place.
Absolutely.
Let him know that he has fallen down on the job, and he has played the role of charlatan. He has played the role of the shadow candidate, and he ought to account for that. Remember, we kept, like you said, we've been talking about this for quite some time now and asking the question, where are these votes going? What is he doing with them? We're not hearing it, but finally we have some hints as to where Bernie intends to take them. But that's a great place to start, and thanks for getting the conversation started today. Good to hear from you, Joel. Let's talk to Patricia from New York. Hello, you're on the air.
Good afternoon, Eutrice. It's always wonderful to hear your healthy voice, and good afternoon to the PRN family.
Thank you so much for that.
Bernie was in New York last night at Town Hall. And Town Hall, for those who are not familiar with it, seats 1,800 people. And I went because I wanted to hear what he was going to articulate as next steps. I want you to know that people waited hours. People started lighting up as early as 4:30. The doors didn't open until 5:30, and he wasn't scheduled to speak until 7. And at 7:30, people were still trying to get in. 1,800 people, and there was not an empty seat in the house. And his message last night sounded like a campaign speech. So he talked about TPP and making certain that at the convention, he talked about all the people who are in the different platforms, and it's going to be a platform fight. And they're going to talk about assault weapons ban and Wall Street reform and Glass-Steagall and, you know, the regular stuff that he's been talking about for over a year. He mentioned incarceration in passing. He talked about jobs and the fact that, you know, people of color are negatively impacted by not having jobs. But there was nothing new, and he said nothing about next steps until this morning, when he was on one of those morning shows and he was asked if he was going to vote for Hillary, and he said yes. So even though he hasn't said what he's going to do, he did say he's going to vote for Hillary. And I want you to know that his speech was met with resounding applause of 1,799 people last night.
I wonder who did not applaud. It's so hard to figure that out.
So his message last night was that his vision is transforming this country, and he's going to do everything to make sure that Trump doesn't win. And, you know, when I was growing up, my mom always said to me, if you really want to know what a person is thinking, watch what he does, not what he says. And so the message that Bernie is giving is that maybe I won't come out and say I'm supporting Hillary, but I'm going to vote for her. What does that mean?
Yeah, but playing these silly games. I mean, what is the point of this?
But, you know, but what I really want to talk about is listening to Loretta Lynch, the part that you played earlier this week. And I listened to her, and I listened to her describe this brave community, this LGBT community, this Latino community that was targeted in this terrible act of hate and terror. And I listened to her say those words, and went, the sincerity in her voice was palpable. And I said to myself, my God, Trevor, when you look at all the children and the adults, Sandra Bland, Michael Brown, Tamir Rice, Freddie Gray, all of these people, and you have never, ever heard anyone from the Justice Department talk in such a humane way about a community and a terrible act of hate and terror. And I said, if this is not a lesson to black people, then I don't know what is. There is a lesson to be learned here. There is a lesson to be heard here. And I seriously hope that black and brown people hear this lesson. It's about political power, and it's about political pressure. And it's about, as you aptly state, who is supported and who is not, who is protected and who is not. And this is clear evidence of who is not protected, a community that is out there by themselves. And so they're going to have to wrestle with some concrete answers if anybody analyzes this correctly.
Thank you for your call today and for your information and your analysis. It's right on point. Thanks, Patricia. 888-874-4888. Harvey from Berkeley is next. You're on the air, Harvey. How are you?
Very good. And how are you, wonderful Eutrice? You sound
Thank
great.
Thank you, wonderful Harvey. Well, I see you've had some movement in the earth in California. Tell us about that.
Yes. Well, actually, I'd like to make a couple little statements about, first about Brexit. And then about the Diablo Canyon nuclear power plant and earthquakes. Well, the Brexit thing was great. And I think to follow up what Gary said earlier, it actually is a great thing because I believe that we have this transatlantic investment partnership going, and it would have been with the European Union. But because of what Britain did, the European Union is going to break up, and I believe that it'll make the transatlantic trade and investment partnership fail. And therefore, because if it would have passed, we too would have lost sovereignty over all everything corporate. Like if they wanted to put in a fracking unit, some company somewhere in the world wanted to put in fracking units, and we didn't want it in any local jurisdiction, they would say, well, you either pay us what the profits we would have gotten, or it's coming in. And our politicians would have lost complete sovereignty. They would have only been able to vote on, say, social issues, but nothing to do with business. So this was the corporate takeover of the world, and I think America was saved by Britain's move away from the European Union. And I think this is a great thing. And so that's my take on that.
What do you think about the fact that it was the end result of a referendum, a people's vote, on whether to stay within the European Union or to leave it, and despite a lot of pressure, even by the now resigning Prime Minister, Mr. Cameron, and a lot of others, who, including the President of the United States, urging Britons to support staying within the Union, they voted absolutely not. What do you think about that?
I think that, well, first of all, the media is painting it like, when I just listened to the media, they said it's like a right-wing action, that the right wing across the world, across Europe, is really happy that this didn't happen. So they're making it look like it's, but really it's for the people. It's more of a people's action. And I think that that our president will have trouble now with the TPP. They may start seeing what the transatlantic trade and investment partnership did, and they might not want it, the Trans-Pacific partnership there. So I think that that it's a great thing, and it's a return of autonomy to the peoples of the world and away from our corporate overlords who want to control the planet and override all of our political power. That's what I think about that. And as far as the Diablo, and the great thing happened this week too, like the Diablo Canyon power plant, the PG&E who owns it, there was a meeting coming up, and I think I told everyone last week to go to the California State Lands Commission. They had power over the Diablo Canyon nuclear power plant, and they're coming up on next week on the June 28th with a vote to call for a full environmental review of the Diablo Canyon nuclear power plant before they relicense them for another 10 years. And I asked your audience to go to the website of the California State Lands Commission and click on the contact button and say that we want a full environmental review, because the movement, like you say, the San Andreas Fault, there's records of it starting to move, and we may get a mega thrust magnitude 9 earthquake, just like Fukushima. That's what happened in Fukushima, and that could knock that plant down. The plant is only built to for a 7.5 earthquake, and a mega earthquake could really. It's been there 30 years. It's brittle. The reactors, due to neutron emanation from the reactor's core, the casing, which is supposed to be ductile, which means flexible, has become brittle, and so a big shock could really break it, and then we'd have a Fukushima-like event of catastrophe. The plant sits in front of the California Central Growing Valley. All the water and the food would be contaminated with radioactivity. There's no end to it. We're betting the whole farm on this old nuclear plant. So PG&E, they did a scam. They just said, "Well, we're gonna close the plant down in 9 years." Well, 9 years, you know, there's too much global warming. The polar caps are melting, and that gives rise to more tectonic plate movements of the Earth, which gives rise to more earthquakes. And there's a bigger chance every day of a big earthquake, which could knock that plant down. So 9 years is kind of a joke. So I'm calling on your public once again to go to the California State Lands Commission and website and click on contact and call for a full environmental review of the plant, because the reason that PG&E said that they wanted to close the plant in the Diablo Canyon nuclear power plant in 9 years was contingent on waiving the Environmental Act, the environmental review. And so we saw the way that was their scam. They said, okay, we'll close it in 9 years, but no environmental review for 9 years. So I'm saying they know something we don't know. That plant is vulnerable, and it really is time to close that nuclear plant. So I just want to thank your audience for going to the California State Lands Commission and telling them that to ask for a full environmental review. I think that made a big difference.
Thank you very much, Harvey, for your call today. Always informational about
the
environment and environmental issues in California and beyond. Rosedale is next. We having New Yorkers dominate the conversation today. What's going on? Jose, you're on the air.
Greeting my professor.
How are you?
Extra blessings be upon you always.
Thank you so much.
Now, I told you some time ago that I voted for Senator Saunders in the primary election. And I did that for two reasons, as I said. One, because I didn't want to seem ungrateful to the memories of those who have sacrificed so much in the struggle to give us the right to vote in this country. Well, not all of us have that right, but some of us have the right to vote. And also, I did it out of my layman's analytical mind. And I am still watching to see what the senator is going to do before I make my other move with where I go with the one vote that I have. All right? But I will leave all of that for the brighter minds of myself, because I deeply believe that no matter what happens, we as African people in this place will be casualties of this crooked and evil political system, because we are not in the game. We don't have any horses in the race. So that is how I look at it. But the other thing I would like to get your opinion on. You know, I'm an island man, and lots of times I think parochially, I think island. And something happened recently here that it has me thinking, and I would like your opinion on the matter, because I am not privy and not up on international laws and things like that, because I know most of these international laws that were created, we never had any input in it. These are the Europeans, including this European nation, they all created these laws, some trade laws and all these other laws, and then they call us and say, listen, this is the way it's going to be. Nobody ever called us from the beginning, this inception, and said, What do you think about this, how we should go about creating these laws, trade laws and other laws and so forth? So we're just calling when it's finished and just ask us to sign on to it. I demand that we sign on to it. Well, recently, in light of this monstrosity, this tragedy that took place in this massacre that took place in Florida, this is something that if we were living in an ideal world, it wouldn't have happened. But we constantly live with evil, and these are the results that we get from evil. And as I said all the time, that the war between good and evil has been lost a long time ago to evil. Now, I believe in the sanctity of all human lives. But I have a problem with the U.S. government under our president, President Obama. It approved that the embassy in Jamaica should fly the flag that represents the gay community, that should be flown half-mast with their U.S. flag above, which is considered their sovereign territory, right? That is understandable. But I believe that there are some things, even if it is a law, I don't know if it is a law. It is customary that when we have tragedies or we are mourning certain things that happen, the appropriate way to go about doing it is fly your national flag at half-mast. This is customary, I believe, throughout the world. Now, this authorization for this flag to be flown over Jamaica, knowing full well that Jamaica is a country that has not legalized homosexuality, the same-sex marriage, and LGBT, names of the alphabet, I can't keep up with them. And I think for the President of the United States, who has set himself up as the poster child, the poster president for the homosexual community in the world, I believe that was very, very, I'm looking for the right word. It was very disrespectful for this president to fly that flag over our nation, and it's like rubbing this disrespect and ramming it down the throats of a small nation that is least able to protect and to defend their rights. When I don't think this president and his administration would have gone to Saudi Arabia, and made those other countries that are their allies, that they're doing all kind of military collaboration with and so on and so forth, and knowing full well how they feel about this situation, they would not have gone to those countries and perpetrate that disrespect on the nation. But little countries, little islands, such as Jamaica and other islands of the Caribbean and Africa, they feel that they have the power and the right of an imperialist nation to force certain things down the throat of little people simply because we don't have the might to stand up and to say, no, we don't like this. And I would like to get your opinion on this matter, because this is something that is a bone of contention, and this is not something that the people of Jamaica is getting the opportunity to work out among themselves. This is a government which is a big bully that is going about and telling these nations, even come visit Jamaica and to talk to the people about homosexuality. And I believe my professor, I could be wrong, but I still believe I'm entitled to my feelings. And as I said, I believe in the sanctity of all human lives, but I believe people must be respected. You are the host of the country, and I believe that was very disrespectful for the United States and this president, which will go down in history as the president of the poster child of the homosexual community. My professor? Hello?
Yes, I'm here.
Yes, I am asking your opinion on the matter.
Well, a couple of things.
Mm-hmm.
We've been explaining since June 12th when this occurred, we've been explaining the politicization of this massacre.
Mm-hmm.
And we have been explaining it in the context of the fact that although most of the people killed were Puerto Rican, they in the normal political world, it would have caused news, it would have made news, but it would have made news for a different reason. It would have made news simply because of the enormity of the event and the tragedy of it. But it has made news in a different way because the community affected happens to be politically potent right now and global in their political power. And so this, right or wrong, but this is how it is. The tragedy, therefore, now becomes other than simply a tragedy. It comes with all these other things attached to it. The president himself declared it an act of terrorism and hate. We have the added issue here of race, where the president could capitalize as proxy for Hillary Clinton as being very pro-gay community and very humane, responding on a humane level. The president responding as the commander-in-chief. I compared and contrasted, if you may recall, the response by the president to this particular tragedy as opposed to the response to the killing of 9 people at a historic black church in South Carolina. Two entirely different approaches, two entirely different sentiments, two entirely different results here. Well, this is what politics does. It shapes things, and it is used, and even tragedies like this are used in a way to advance the political agenda. The political agenda here is, as the president leaves office, to create a legacy. This is a great thing to add to the long list of things that he wants to be remembered for, that he was very much an advocate for the gay community. And we do have in the wings the person he is going to be stumping for, Hillary Clinton, who needs the gay vote. And in this particular tragedy, you have the conflation of two things. You have gays who were predominantly Latinos. And you have the added dimension of them all being killed by a person who supposedly swore allegiance to ISIS. So we have the element of international / domestic terrorism. This is a gold mine. And I know I sound very detached and very unemotional here, but this is a gold mine as far as these public figures are concerned with regard to their political interests and their agendas. So they will use it. They will massage this thing into whatever it is they need to do to massage it into in order to capitalize politically on it. Now, the question that you raise about the what you consider to be a huge insult by having the gay flag, you said, at half-mast on at the U.S. Embassy in Jamaica. Well, you're right. The embassy is sovereign territory, and the United States could do whatever it wants to do, even if it offends the sensibilities of the local population. It is not breaking the law. It is simply offending people's sensibilities. And if they have to weigh the people's sensibilities against the political objective, your sensibilities could take a hike. Secondly, you have no way, Jamaica has no way of preventing anything from happening that it considers to be offensive. The third piece is, this is a deliberate thing, because the president has gone throughout the African diaspora, not just in the Caribbean. He has said the same thing in Africa, throughout Africa, his visits throughout Africa, and other parts of the world. He has talked about gay rights as a major international human rights issue. And so it is consistent with his position, and again, going back to the political aspect of it, his concern and his position, his articulated position on this matter, is in service of his legacy, what he is to be remembered for. This is not a joke to him. This is political currency that may actually translate into actual currency, because he has to have a political afterlife as well. So who knows, he may be making quite a bit of money and may get a great deal of recognition for his work in educating the world about human rights, the gay issues, and the violence done to gays in particular as a class of individuals. We know that throughout the Caribbean and in the African diaspora, there is intense homophobia. There's no question about it. It is seen, homosexuality is seen as being extremely unnatural, ungodly, just a really awful way to live. And people are condemned and killed. And right there in Jamaica, you may recall Buju Banton singing a song about, just blow these people away, just kill them. And it was a very popular song, encouraging people to kill gays. So you do have that. That is an undeniable element of the social structure throughout the African diaspora. The question about how the societies as a whole deal with homosexuality.
Lastly, my professor, you know, a word of caution to our people. We have a tendency to hop on board and be a part of many struggles and causes and so forth. But when the dust gets settled, we are usually the ones that are the subservient folks. I know that I noticed throughout our history, when you look at the NAACP and the Urban League and all these groups who have been funded by folks who say they were our friends. And when the dust got settled, they were the ones who benefited from the whole movement, and we are still being subservient. And we have to be very mindful that there are times when the oppressors wind up becoming the oppressors. And again, as a people, we are not able to protect our interests. We get involved with others and saying that we are looking out for our rights. But again, we find at the end of the day, we are the casualties of these struggles.
So we also, in many instances, and I don't refute that statement at all, but in many instances, we have to look at what is the contributing factor. The contributing factor is the failure, the utter failure to see to your interests. When people say, when you say things like, well, we serve a dominant culture, whatever it happens to be, and we become part of their agenda, that is your answer right there.
Mm-hmm.
When you yield your turf without having any kind of protection, any way of protecting your interests, this is what happens. This is not rocket science. This is what has happened time and again. So it comes back to the question, and we've raised it here repeatedly, what are people doing with regard to organizing in order to maximize your power and have that as leverage with regard to your interests? But we're not doing that work. We're not doing the work.
I agree.
Okay.
Not enough of us is doing it, at least.
Yes, that's absolutely true. Thanks, Jose, for your call today.
It's been a pleasure, my professor. One love.
Thank you. One love. 888-874-4888. It is Free Your Mind Friday on Lead Stories. This is your open forum. unscripted, as you can tell. Whatever it is you wish to talk about, let's talk about it and find out what your opinions are. There's no right or wrong. It's just a matter of what brought you to your opinion. What was the journey that you took? And could you lay out the case as best you can? And then we do a back and forth and see where we end up. David from Brooklyn, you're on the air.
Yes, nice to talk with you, Eutrice.
Thank you. Same here.
What's on my mind is this. I am so tired of hearing about this election and the primaries and all the goings on with this duopoly and all the things that are said by Trump and Clinton and Sanders and whatnot. I'm wondering, what is it going to take for the people, the masses of the people, that some people say the 99%, to understand there is no future in this duopoly that is going to bring about things in their interests? I mean, it's just impossible. This is just all this stuff about reform and whatnot. These are two international capitalist parties that control the situation here politically, and they function in the interests of the oligarchy and the rest of the ruling class that run things. How is it that people can't get it here? They just don't understand. So, you know, I'm so sick of hearing these people talking about the better of two evils and these various candidates, Sanders, Hillary, and Trump, and what does it take to make them understand this is useless? You're not going to get this tiger to be, these two tigers, Republicans and Democrats, to be vegetarians. They're not going to do it. There's no future in this. None. Zero. I don't waste my time looking at this stuff.
Vegetarians, I like that.
No, they're not going to do it. So what I see is a massive game being successfully played on the people by those in power, and that is the Republicans and Democrats. And this is not a place like Scandinavia, where essentially you have a demographic situation where a lot of the people are alike. Over here, you have a fantastic ability of the ruling class here, because of the diversity of people, to play the old game of divide and conquer. And people have to understand, you're voting for a Republican or a Democrat is useless. That's not going to change anything, and they're not going to reform. Why should they give up power and reform something that is in their interest? How is it that people can't get it? That is what is getting me. And,
could I ask you to, if I can, press a little button here, could I ask you to try and answer your own question? What do you think is the reason that people aren't getting it?
I believe that people are so brainwashed into thinking this is how things are supposed to work. We have a situation where other parties, they make it a Everest-like climb to put other parties on the ballot, and people are so trained that they think that this so-called two-party system is a natural thing, and they think what is really a dictatorship of the oligarchy, and they put on the clothes of a quasi-democracy, and most of the people fall for it because they have so many ways of playing people against each other, and the number one tool there is white supremacy and all the other things they do, so they're able to play a big game on the people, and the people are falling for it. That's
well,
what's happening.
Well, of course. I mean, could you see any other way that it would work? If you don't have information, and somebody provides what looks and sounds like information to you, and that's all that you have to go on, more than likely, that is what you will use to influence your opinions about things. And mm-hmm. your opinions, in turn, will influence your actions. Right?
Yes.
Now, you were a teacher.
Yes.
Okay?
Mm-hmm.
You were a very effective teacher. Could I ask you, in a situation like this, where we have people who are not educated about their civic rights and duties, if you will,
yes.
and how the system works, is there something that you, as a retired teacher, all the years that you have taught people who didn't know how to fly planes, they had no clue that they could.
You got it. Well,
but by the time you were done with them, they were flying planes.
Right, everything changed. Well, I'll tell you the truth. When I closed my door, I taught a lot of things about aviation. I gave them the foundation, the fundamentals. But at least a good portion of the time was having to do with dealing with how the system runs and how you are going to make it in this system if you're going to be here.
And so, the title of your book, I will ask you to announce it, because it's the biggest clue yet.
Playing the game, yes, I
playing
know.
The game. So right. we have to learn how to play the game, the political game. And we
that's
most
right.
of us
that's
don't know
that. That's what I taught. That's what I taught, and it won. Because a lot of people were successful if they listened to me. Some people did fall by the wayside. For various reasons, but the ones who are successful, they're all off the world, and it worked for them. And many of them who I taught, some of them who didn't believe me, they called me I was racist or something like that because I told the truth about something. Years later, they came back and say, "You were right," said to me. I was right. But the point is well taken. If you don't know anything else, then you go with what they have given you. And they tell you that, oh, we have a two-party system. You think that's what's supposed to be. And that's what happens to most people here. And they don't understand there's absolutely no change that's going to happen with this system we have. And these parties are not going to change because they're not going to give up power. And they don't have to. All they have to know how is to play the people, and that's what they do.
But here we have also an opportunity. It's a crisis, but there's an opportunity here, and that is for alternative political parties and movements that could be built in this breach. But we're not seeing enough signals. We're not getting enough signals that work is being done to educate people about what alternative systems could look like and could do for them. So it's clearly the case that the duopoly, the Republicans Party and the Democratic Party, they have no interest, they have no reason to tell people how really useless these parties are. But we are seeing also that the parties that could make a strong effort to get into these communities and to begin these kinds of discussions and to undertake this kind of education, they also are not in the fight. They've pulled back from this.
Yes, they've pulled back for it. Plus, we have another disadvantage because we have this misleadership class of black politicians and ministers that are out in the community going along with the status quo and the duopoly. So they're giving either no information or false information to the masses of people, and the people just don't get it. And, well, I try to do this all the time where I go and talk to people, but I'm one person. I need to join together with some other people and start talking about these things. So,
well, I think you ought to revisit your book and see. There are so many lessons there about organizing, because what you did as a teacher, as a mentor, was you came through a pretty rough situation, trenchant segregation, that limited possibilities, not just for you, but for others as well. And you wanted to prevent that from happening, so you utilized your skill and your expertise and your experience in an entirely different way. You educated people. And I go to the radical here, air meaning out of, and ducere to lead. So you led them out of a state of ignorance into a state of knowing, and with a particular skill that gave them a system. You see, we talk about systems here all the time. You devised a survival system for the students that you taught.
Exactly.
So it wasn't just about the mechanics of learning how to fly. I imagine that just about anybody could acquire these skills if they work hard enough at it.
Absolutely. If you could walk out to the airfield and walk out to the airplane, I could teach you how to fly.
But what you did was you engaged in education. You showed people and devised a system, a survival system that had to do with life and livelihood. Now, that's can't get better than that.
Right, exactly. I closed my door, and that was it.
So that's the work we need to do. So that was... You found the answer, you defined the answer yourself to your own question today, and it was found right there in your book. I recommend it highly. It's called Playing the Game. The author is David Strawn, and I've been promising to find a way to get you to talk about this a bit more, and we will do that as soon as I possibly can.
And it's
it
being
is
made
an
into
extraordinary
a movie.
Lesson, and that's what education is.
Yes, yes, yes. The treatment has already been done for the movie, and so it's being considered now for a feature film.
Oh, wow. Big time. We have to make appointments now to talk to you soon. Tell my secretary to call my secretary. Okay, great. But you see, the answer is there, and you have not only theorized it, you've actually applied it, and you created a system that is, A, understandable, people get to understand and learn it, and two, to replicate it.
Yes,
so it can be moved anywhere. And three, with great success. People were able to take what you gave them because it was valid and authentic education, and they were able to lead very productive lives with the information.
And I laugh about it every day. Every day I got a smile on my face when I think about it.
That's great, and you ought to. So thanks. You bring us to the end of our program today on a very high note. And that's what we have to do. It's education. It's community education.
All the best
it's what
you.
We're doing here, which is peer education, peer-to-peer education. Through the sharing of ideas and opinions and information, we broaden our view. We add dimension to our lives, and we equip ourselves a little bit better to deal with this system. And the only way to deal with it is to fashion a system of your own. And hopefully, this is what Bernie Sanders would get to understand, that it doesn't belong to you. It's not yours. It is a shared property, and it's supposed to yield a shared benefit. It's not for a party, it's not for an individual, it's for a group. That's the difference here. And we have to really rev up that kind of work, because literally it will affect our very survival. And that's what's in trouble right now. We don't have systems of our own to counter the system that has incredible effectiveness, because it funds itself, it has its It has its agenda clearly defined. It pursues it with laser beam precision. And we're all expendable. The system survives. That's the first and only imperative that matters. Well, thank you so much for listening today and contributing, all who have called and lent their voices to the program today. I really appreciate the consistently high level of discourse, and it is a tribute not only to you, but to all of us listening and participating. Even if we're not calling and being active, we actively are listening. Stay tuned. Coming up next, Alternative Visions with Dr. Jack Rasmus. You know you're going to learn something new there. Stay tuned for that. And you can reach me at leadstories, L-E-I-D, stories at gmail.com. This is The Weekend. I always urge you to mix and mingle with people who bring positive dimension to your life. Absolutely make it a point to avoid people who don't. Maintain a sense of humor and watch out for the system. And we'll see each other on Monday. Everything, hopefully, will be pretty good for you until then. Thanks a lot for listening. We'll talk to each other on Monday. Bye-bye.